You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hey, Alex.
Hey, Nick. We got to talk.
Okay.
We got to talk. How do I put this? My dad, okay? My dad is a huge fan of our show. He's a huge fan of me, and he's a huge fan of you.
That's very kind of him.
Separate from the show, together, every episode comes out, he calls me. As soon as it launches on Monday, he listens and calls me with his thoughts and tries, you know. Almost every time I have the same conversation with him and I say, I'm going to address it with Nick. I'm going to bring it up. We're going to work on it. He says, you guys are great. You know, the dynamic's really good. What you're saying is really interesting. Typical dad stuff. The one thing is that Nick has a filthy fucking mouth. And as soon as he told me the first time I started listening for it, maybe it was even last episode, I realized just in the cold open alone, most people use or like, but nope. You just straight up.
Listen, fucker, don't fucking do this. Are you insane? What's wrong with you? Get fucking help.
Yeah. You know, I think that what it comes down to is I love the word. It's because there's one particular swear. Now, see, now I'm conscious about saying it. There's one particular swear that I love that starts with an F and ends with a uck. I mean, fuck, man.
Maybe I'll just bleep it out for this episode.
Bleep
Maybe
it?
Every time you say it, I'll bleep it, and then you can listen back and you can know
how often I've said it.
How often you say it. Because it's a lot.
You know what, Ed and Alex? F-ity, fuck, fuck, fucking, fuck, fucker, fuck. Fuck. Fuck, fuck.
My dad's gonna love this one.
Little Justin. Little justice, little justice.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to Little Justice, this thing we do, our film analysis podcast. I am Nick Walker.
I'm Alex Smolo.
We are so thrilled to be back here. I will work on the swearing, Mr. Smolo. I will work on
it. It's
a
thing. It's a real thing.
It's a real thing. And I've actually noticed it. And especially because I have another show that shall not be named. Because we don't talk about that show here. But
You can do it.
It's
you know, it's fine.
So I have
my favorite show.
Shut up. I have a show called The Chaos Twins on Broadway World, and I noticed that, you know, one of the things that they actually talked to me about, like the first thing, was like, "Hey, can you cut back on the swearing for this one?" I
was like, "I'm glad to know that I'm not alone in this."
No, everyone's brought it up, so I can certainly cut back, but also, you know, fuck it. I hope you beeped that out. Did you beep that out? I hope you beeped that out. Yeah, man, here we are back again to analyze another set of movies, talk about another theme. We have a very, 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 very special guest. I cannot undersell this guest. I mean, oversell rather. He is just a wonderful man. We met him through our love of the Disney parks. He is a family man, an artistic man, a wonderful, wonderfully minded man. Just so blessed to have him on here. AJ Miller, how you doing, buddy?
Wow. Man, I feel like I'm on one of those radio shows where they give you the awesome introduction that you can absolutely not live up to.
You can.
Yeah, eventually I'm going to have to get one of those soundboards so I can be playing sounds for when we introduce people. And
yeah.
I wonder what your sound would be, what AJ's like intro sound effect.
It would probably be like, bum, bum, bum,
bum. Yeah, exactly.
I'll find some stuff and edit it in. All right, so Nick, cue him back up.
All right, I love it. So, ladies and gentlemen, we are so excited to have this guest on today. He is just an incredible person, has worked all over in the entertainment and tourism and travel industries. He is just one of our favorite people, the one, the only, AJ Miller.
Woo!
Wow. I don't even know what
I don't know what it's going to be yet, but I'm sure I just put way too much work into that.
You know what? You're introducing me like a pro wrestler. Do I need like a
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Jeez. AJ, how are you doing over there, man? How's things in this COVID universe?
You know, I got to be honest with you. I'm not too much of a homebody, or at least I didn't think I was. And being at home has been, it's been great. You know, getting the opportunity to spend a bunch of time with my wife and my kids has been awesome. I learned that I am not cut out to be a third or first grade teacher. That is not my calling. Nothing against those guys. I believe they're all saints. And, you know, my kids both had amazing teachers. But, you know, there's just a lot that you forget. You know, after a couple of decades of not going over basic math, I feel like a complete idiot. But, you know, it's been great. You know, trying to keep them busy has been, you know, at front of mind for us. But, you know, it's like anybody else, right? We're all afraid a little bit, and or maybe a lot bit, you know, and it's just, you know, hey, wash your hands. Like, God, how disgusting were we as a society?
Oh, thinking back on it now, yeah, I'd never wash my hands before things. Like, everyone's going to have the best habits now.
Well, think about it too, right? Like, all those people that, you know, if you're in a public place and they walk out of the bathroom without washing their hands, like, okay, naturally you are disgusting anyway, but oh man, like, what else are you carrying with you? That's, I'm looking at that stuff.
It really
now
makes me want to, so. I mean, so we've bought a lot of surgical gloves here, like not, you know, hospital grade, but just like, you know, nice, like little gloves to wear to the supermarket or whatever. And honestly, like, I'm thinking that when I go back to, you know, when it finally comes time to go back to public places, along with masks, I'm definitely going to want to put that into effect as well. Cause I'm just like, you know, you just don't know. Like, you touching guardrails, touching handrails. Like, there's nothing wrong with like a good pair of gloves, especially to make them fashionable. Am I alone in this? Am I alone in the glove wanting? Or is there?
No, I think the gloves, I think that'll happen. And the same with masks. You know, I feel like the masks may just stick around.
Yeah,
and become sort of a fashionable, you know, a new item.
Oh,
for
yeah,
people to just have,
which is crazy.
I've gotten a little too into the mask thing, to be honest with you.
You got a collection?
Yeah, I do. All right, I'll admit it. Jeez. You know, I thought I'd be pretty awesome and buy some Lakers masks. I'm a pretty big Laker fan.
Yeah.
But, you know, you spend the money on them, they take forever to get here, and yeah, then they don't fit. So,
oh, no.
Yeah, right? Well, I mean, I guess I have like a weird head, and my ears are... Yeah, I mean, I'm not like, you know, Sloth from Goonies or anything like that, but, you know, like, just they don't fit. So I've gone to the gator style.
Yep.
Pullover thing.
That's what I was about to say that.
You know, so much easier and...
Gator style. No, explain this to me.
Yeah, it's basically like a turtleneck. It just kind of slides on over your head instead of...
So people wear these like skiing. Yeah, stuff.
Exactly. The gators are my favorite thing. So when I first bought gators, Sarah, who sends her love to you, AJ, by the way.
Love her.
She's
me too.
Shut up, Alex. she was so mad at me because she was like, Nick, you're just gonna get overheated with that gator on. And I was like, no, like it's gonna be chill. And she's like, no, you're just gonna get overheated. And then we were walking around the neighborhood, you know, with our, and she has her mask and I have my gator. And I could just see her low-key getting mad at me. We had bought these like beers to walk around with, and she kept having to like remove her mask and like to take it off and put it on. And I just pulled down my nice little gator and took a nice little sip and then pulled it back up. It was so simple. And she was like, this is bullshit. And I was like, yeah, well, get a gator.
It's a definite thing how to drink with masks on. We've been to a couple out, you know, restaurants. They sit you outdoors far away from people, but like you really can't have a mask and also be consuming things.
No, you can't at all.
And I mean, your wife is amazing. So shout out to Sarah. She's one of the best.
Yay.
You thought you were going to overheat, but like, don't you wear leather jackets in the summer?
That's exactly. Lest we forget, my fashion knows no temperature.
Trench coats, leather jackets,
everything.
Wool wristbands.
You remember those trench coats back in college?
Oh,
yeah. I used to wear it. AJ used to wear it. So me and you don't know this, or maybe you do know this, but I used to basically live on Alex's couch. I was literally the dude on the couch. in Alex's home. I'm very concerned.
In like the ratty old trench coat.
Oh my God, it would be great. What a great time that was.
And this was like a 400 square foot apartment with three people already living there.
Yeah, I'm very confused as to why.
I have no idea. My room was quite literally, it was 10 by 6, I think.
You made that work. Like that. You made that work so well.
Yeah. Needless to say, there should not have been a 6'2" man in a trench coat on the couch
weeks at a time. Welcome to New York. Welcome to New York, buddy.
Welcome to New York.
Very East Coast.
Very East Coast. Supremely. Speaking of East Coast, you, of course, are, like Alex, based on the West Coast. The thing that we share in common between the three of us is our love of the Disney parks. We met AJ at the Disney parks. AJ knows a lot of behind the scenes things at the Disney parks, and has made our Disney experience on so many times, just a wonderful place, just because of his knowledge. And I just have to acknowledge that, because some of my favorite memories at those Disney parks are with these two gentlemen who I'm on the line with right now. And I wish that we were there. I wish that we were back.
I think about it more than I should.
Yeah, me too. You know, and that's actually something to be really proud of. You know, there's been a lot of discussion, or I wouldn't even call it discussion, but, you know, there's definitely some opinions about, you know, adulting at Disneyland and, yep, or, you know, Disney parks in general. And, you know, look, here's my take. If
Please.
You go somewhere and you have a great time doing it, then like, don't kill somebody's buzz, because that's, yep, what they like to do. You know,
yep,
I mean, you could definitely be doing way worse things. Like anything else, it's not perfect, but you know, it is a place where people can go and they can, you know, kind of escape what they're going through. A lot of people do that, you know, and having spent a lot of time there specifically, you know, and meeting people and hearing the stories, it's definitely an escape for people. And I admire that. You know, it's one of the great benefits of getting to be in that kind of environment regularly, is that you get to meet a really awesome cross-section of people who are all different. And to be fair, that shapes how you look at the world. You know,
yeah,
I'm not, yeah, the same person I was, you know, when I got into that environment, you know, 25 years ago. I mean, there's other benefits too, getting to share a lot of those awesome experiences, you know, with friends and family is great. You know, it's great for you guys. It's great for them. You know, my kids love going. And, you know, when you do it a lot, and I think you guys feel this, and it's suddenly not there, it's a little empty, right?
It's,
you know, you're
hugely
thinking like, oh my
empty.
God, like, you know, going to the park and walking around is cathartic for some people. And it is for the people that work there as well. You know, you guys mentioned, you know, being around me and meeting me there and having some experiences. And, you know, I'm not able to do what I do without thousands of other people there that do way more than I do, who have jobs that are way more important than mine, right? But it really takes all of us working together to create even just one memory. You know, I share a story with people that I work with about how you should look at interactions, right? If somebody is showing up, you have to make the assumption that they saved their whole life to come for one day. And that's how serious you have to take those interactions, you know? And if you don't, then you could be robbing someone of an opportunity to have an amazing time or build memories that will last forever for them. And you also rob yourself of the opportunity to experience that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that all comes through. Haven't spent as much time at like the Universal parks or anything, but like the difference to me, you know, I call it attention to detail, but it's more just like it's a broad in every single aspect when you're there. It's what you're saying, where it is paying attention to the experience that you're having, right? It's making sure that every thought you're having is trying to envelop you in the experience and make things a little more immersive, make things a little better.
It's real storytelling. That's exactly what it is.
That's exactly what it was. Yeah, it's storytelling, because I think, you know, Alex talking about the difference. I think I was just, you know, a couple weeks ago, I was on the Dreams Unlimited Travel podcast, which is a podcast that's an affiliate of the Diz, which is a big Disney World, Disneyland podcast. And they also talk about Universal. But one of the things we talked about is like how, because Disney has so perfected this, you know, the sense of storytelling, right? you know, the Universal, I love Universal and it's amazing, but like, that's not, you know, that kind of immersion is not necessarily what they do. And that's fine. And that's what they're, you know, you kind of, it's kind of reflected in how they run the park. Like, you know, it's, walking in, especially in the one in Orlando, like, you know, it's, some people say it's a lot more adult, but I would just say it's like, yeah, it's a lot more kind of choose your own adventure in a way. Like you just, you know, you're at this cool place that has like good drinks and salty food, but also happens to have this amazing theme park with theming and, you know, in Harry Potter World and all these wonderful rides and the magic of the movies and all that stuff. But Disneyland and World, from the moment, every ounce of your experience is curated. And there was just such a feeling, even on the worst day that I've been there, there's been such a feeling that I've just been taking, that I'm taken care of, and that my experience is valued, and that the joy on my face is valued. And like, I also, traveling in a crew with me and the people that I choose to go to the parks with, none of us are, you know, I know this term is floating around right now, but I'm gonna say Karens. Like, none of us are those people who are trying to go up to people and make their, you know, and be like, I didn't get this on my birth. Like, we're not those people, you know, we're not going to ask for anything. We're just happy to be there. And I think that we as, you know, as kind of the guests have that responsibility as well to like, if you can just go and just open your mind to this thing, it really is just like a place where you can just play. Like, that's what's just fun.
I think the difference too, because people who don't go, because you look at it from the outside and Disney being this corporate giant, and theme parks in general being, you know, there's sort of a stereotype of them being like, oh, like they're way too expensive. They're there to just like have you buy things from gift shops and food is overpriced, all this stuff. Like there's this essence, unless you're there, of like, oh, like that it's a money sucking enterprise. What Disney does really, really well, the theme parks, is it doesn't feel like that. Like anytime it's dealing with a brand, there are really no brands in the park, right? The Starbucks is even disguised as another thing, and you're not, you know, you don't know it's a Starbucks till you're in there. They don't make you feel like you're a customer, right? They don't make you feel like you're there to open your wallet up to them. They make sure that the actual life of the park is genuine, mm-hmm. and all the business stuff is floating around outside of it, which I think is very hard to do, and it's impressive.
Well, and it is a business. That I think that's very another much. Thing that people have to understand too, right? And you know, it's really hard to put yourself in the shoes of, you know, Walt Disney, let's say, right? You know, Walt Disney was Walt Disney. He had a dream and he was pretty amazing, right? If he doesn't have the courage to pursue the dream, then, you know, think about the memories that don't happen now. One could also argue that there would have been another medium to enjoy, you know, things like what we produce and provide. But you know, I don't know. I'm really about the purpose and intent, right? So here's a good example. I experience a lot of really cool things, you know, being there. Yeah. Reactions from people, those are always the best things. Looking around, you know, in a crowd of thousands of people and seeing smiles and happiness. And, you know, I'll share a story that you guys were at. You know, we go, and you know, Nick, while he's Aaron Burring, comes yep. to the Anaheim Park when you guys were in Costa Mesa, I believe.
Yeah.
It was the second time that you probably came more than that, but the second time that I had interacted with you and your wife, Sarah, had a moment meeting Black Panther. That yes. was, it
I was there.
It was, yeah. You were there. It was literally the thing that it's that, you know, cake and ice cream moment where you're yep. like, oh my God, like I'm watching someone do this that is so excited, right? Yep. To meet this character because of the emotional connection for a lot of reasons, right? That yeah. was that was cool for me, yeah. you know? Yeah. And for you guys, it was cool, but it's the emotional connection is what gets you, and that's okay, you know? Yeah. Like yeah. anything else in the world, there are gonna be things that folks can criticize. And Disney's not above that, but they try. At yeah. least from, you know, from my seat, the people that yeah. I work directly with, they care a lot. And yeah. they take it personally. And you know, I was reading on the internet the other day about some criticism about how people take what they do professionally so seriously, right?
Like, yeah.
You don't get any of that money. You know, you're not the owner. Why do you care so much? And, you know, it kind of made me laugh out loud because I'm thinking, yeah, you know, maybe I do care a little too much. And then I roll everything back and go, but that's what makes us special. That's what makes
and different. And I assume that most or all of the people who do work there are also fans of the, like, they would go even if they weren't working there, right? They appreciate what it is.
Some would. I would say that. I think that's fair. Some most certainly would, you know, and it's kind of like this. The culture and atmosphere, it's great. You know, there's a lot of younger, older folks that are working together. You know, if you really take the time to step back and pay attention,
yeah,
you could learn a lot from the people around you. You know, there's a gentleman who worked for me years ago who was a rocket scientist, but
wow,
wanted to come. And I'm not kidding. Like, you say that, right? Oh, what are you, a rocket scientist? He actually was, you know, and he came to work at the parks to do something to decompress his brain because he was thinking of so many complex things that would just, you know, weigh him down that he was like, I just want to come here 2 days a week and, you know, interact with people and do what I do. I was like, wow, that's pretty awesome. You know, and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, and again, we are just so appreciative of the fact that you help create a space where for, you know, however many hours we're there, we just get to forget and we really do miss it. And I, you know, we so rarely get truly sentimental on the show, but it those parks do mean so much, I think, to both me and Alex.
So Nick, would you say if you had to imagine a box, all right, and you have to spend time in this box, you're going to get locked in this box.
Oof.
For a prolonged period of time, would you say that Disneyland is your Nick Cage?
I hate you. I hate you. Alex, of course, is
transition.
You are gross. That is such a disgusting. No, I don't want to hear you sip whatever you're sipping. That's freaking disgusting. It's terrible. Yeah, so nice transition, Alex. The theme of today, we want to, in the tradition, I'll throw you a smoother transition. How about this? In the theme, AJ, of what you do, which is bring magic to so many people, we wanted to talk about a man who has also brought so much magic to so many people.
Yeah, your transition sucks.
You need to work on that one.
I know, but I truly, you know, especially watching this movie when I did, I was like, God, Nicolas Cage, y'all. Nicolas Cage, what can we say?
He does it. Talk about somebody who shows up to work.
Who shows up to work and work in ways that I'm not even sure his directors asked for. They didn't even need that. And
nobody asked for it.
Nobody asked for it.
Us as a people have not asked for what this man is doing.
We were just when we were thinking, when it was something, when we were choosing the topic for AJ, we were like, okay, you know, what can we do? And we were thinking, like, do we want to do something Disney related, parks related? And then somebody had tweeted at me, Nicolas Cage. And I was like, honestly, this would be a really fun one for the three of us. Cause I feel like again, Nick Cage is just so ludicrous that you cannot help but laugh and have some semblance of joy with Mr. Cage. So today's topic, of course, our favorite Nicolas Cage. I'm not going to say movie. I'm going to say experiences, because his movies are experiences.
So good.
You know,
so good. It's
really crazy. AJ, you know, without giving away your choice just yet, prior to this, have you had a lot of experience with the Nicolas Cage movie?
I would definitely say I'm a fan of Nicolas Kim Coppola.
There he goes. Get the original.
About Nick Cage. And you know, I didn't think I was as about Nick Cage as I apparently am, looking at, you know, his filmography when I was figuring out what to choose. That most of the things that were semi mainstream, I really liked. I was entertained by. Not because, you know, it's a Juilliard level performance, but it's just fun.
Yes.
You know, the quirky mannerisms, those things that you can look at and go, God, I've seen somebody do that before. How freaking weird is that?
Yeah. That's, yeah. he's very strange. He's but you know, it's crazy though, because like, so, you know, I went back to, you know, one of Sarah's favorite movies is Moonstruck. And I had not watched Moonstruck in a hot minute. Here's the thing. I'm going to say it. He's a talented man. Like, truly. Like, I say that with no facetiousness or anything.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's super. There's a reason that he was able to rise to such heights, because the baseline was one of like, wow, dude, you're solid. Like, you are a solid actor.
Well, it's funny because he's one of those people I feel like there are people who they're maybe not naturally talented, but they get to where they are because they work really hard and they're very serious about their craft, and not even just acting, like in a lot of industries, there are these people who can push to where they are on their sheer almost narcissistic confidence.
Yes.
Right. Where they come in the room and they say, I'm the best at this. I'm going to be the best. I'm going to do the best. They're not worried about what they look like. They're not worried about what anybody thinks. They're like, I'm just going to come in here and I'm going to knock this out of the park. And Nicolas Cage is kind of a combination of both those things, right? He comes from an actor family, a filmmaker family.
Yep.
His uncle is Francis Ford Coppola.
I mean, come on. And
there's this great little thing in his Wikipedia. It says at 15 years old, he tried to convince his uncle, Francis Ford Coppola, to give him a screen test, telling him, I'll show you acting.
Wow.
His outburst was met with silence in the car.
Like,
imagine being Francis Coppola's nephew and having the nerve at 15 years old to be like, you don't even know what you're talking about. I'm going to show you how to do this. Like, the balls on that man.
Dude, I love that. Actually love that.
It's amazing. And it comes through in his acting, right? Like, a lot of his roles, like, you can really tell he does not give a crap what you think. Like, he's going to knock the lens off the camera. Like, he's just going to come in and be the biggest, best, you know, loudest voice in the room. And yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty fascinating. And it actually, you know, the Coppola thing, or Coppola, how do you pronounce his last name? Coppola or Coppola?
Coppola.
Coppola. Makes sense.
Yeah, that's, you know, what I gathered.
Yeah. You just think of his work, and they actually, like, Coppola as a filmmaker and Nick Cage as an actor are actually not that far off. Like, I watched Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Oh, jeez.
Just love that movie.
Just how completely gonzo that movie. Do you know what? You know what's crazy about the? I just found this out yesterday. I was watching a film analysis channel. I did not know this. So this is how crazy Coppola goes. He fires like the professional VFX team that he has on this movie, and then hires his 28-year-old nephew and just says, like, make some VFX for me. Arguable, debatable whether this man had any previous experience working on films. But like, so many of the visuals that you see, the crazy visuals, are just his like 28-year-old nephew like messing around.
And, like, it's insane. I mean, the whole family tree is insane. Obviously you have like Sofia Coppola, yep, who's a very talented director.
Incredibly
Roman
talented.
Coppola is the, yep, same thing. But then you've got Jason Schwartzman.
Wait,
is part of the family.
How is he, really, part
Jason
of the family?
Jason Schwartzman is cousins to Nicolas Cage.
Of course he is.
Coppola.
Of course
he is the son of Francis Coppola's sister, I believe. There's a whole, Wikipedia draws you, one of the related things is the Coppola family tree.
Oh, I love this.
Robert Coppola Schwartzman is another one. It's a very, very creative family.
Wow. You know, and now what I think is also interesting about this, and AJ, you know, did you find that watching these, that you, there was, because there's different periods of Nicolas Cage, right? Like, they're truly, you know, I think, and Sarah put it like this, she's like, there's pre-Academy Award Nicolas Cage, and then there's post-Academy Award, and then there's post-post-Academy Award. You know what I mean? Like, there's that era, because I'd say, for me, when I think of my favorite Nicolas Cage movie, my movie's going to fall in between 90 and 2000. That's, I think that decade is
90s Cage is the best.
I think 90s... I think it has to be.
90s Cage is real Cage. Or
it's pure eighties Cage is him trying to be an actor, and 90s Cage is him having been successful at that and being like, okay, like time to do what I want to do.
And then 2000s Cage is, hey, they're just gonna pay me money to do movies.
Yeah, 2000s Cage is, I bought too much real estate and I have a tax bill.
When I went, so oh my god, so New Orleans is my favorite city, right? And I like, you know, we go there every year and we love it. One of the things I find fascinating about going to New Orleans is how much property Nicolas Cage has bought in New Orleans. He has bought, so we were, you know, we did one of the best things in New Orleans is a cemetery tour. We go to the cemetery. I think it's like I forget which one it was, St. Louis Cemetery or whatever it is. And in the middle, the dead middle of the cemetery is what can only be described as almost like a Blade Runner-esque black onyx pyramid structure. And we were like, what the hell is that? And they were like, oh, that's Nicolas Cage bought that plot for himself. And we were like, of course he did. And then like the most haunted house in the entirety of the French Quarter, Madame Lalaurie's place. He bought it. He bought the mansion, this mansion where this woman kept slaves in her attic and tortured them in front of her party guests. He bought the mansion at some point. I don't know if he still owns it, but he had it.
Nope. In classic Cage fashion, it says that he bought it in 2007 and then sold it in 2009.
Oh my God.
So, a fleeting focus for him.
What a fascinating
good investment.
Man.
Good investment.
Great investment, Nick. But, you know, most importantly about Nick is his films that have given us so much, so many laughs. And so just what an auteur. what an icon.
Yeah.
Real quick though, let's not forget that he has a kid named Kal-El.
He does. He is obsessed with Superman. He's obsessed with Superman and Elvis.
Right.
He was going to be Superman, wasn't he?
He owned Action Comics 1. He owned a copy, bought it for $110,000, and then had to sell it to pay a tax bill.
Oh my god!
Which I think he just perpetually has tax bills now. He sold it for like 2 point something million.
Jesus. Well, he was and AJ, I do remember, because he was doing Tim Burton's. He's going to do Tim Burton's Superman. I remember that. And they famously have shots of him in, you know, with long black hair in the outfit. I would have seen that. I would have watched it. I would have been like, this is strange. What a strange choice. But also, let's go. You know what I mean? Like, why not? I would totally see a Tim Burton verse of DC Heroes. That would have been, I actually think that would be really interesting. I would have been like, okay, let's see what
truth,
that is.
Justice in the American way.
Yes. So let's get to it. So who wants to go first? Who wants to describe the Nick Cage movies or the Nick Cage?
Something tells me as many films as this man has,
I feel like we've all chosen choices, the same one.
I think we're going to overlap.
I
at least
think
once,
we
yeah.
are too.
Okay. I'm so excited to see.
But there really are so many.
There's so many
to choose.
There are truly so many that we could go to. I was, you know, yeah. Because there was a moment there where I was going to choose adaptation.
Yeah, so I had one that I was going to choose, and I watched it all the way through. I'm glad we had to postpone recording this today, and I'm glad we did, because the one I picked, I was like, this, it's too good a movie.
Yeah, it's to be
the most Nicolas Cage movie. Like, it's too well done.
Yeah.
I need something more Nicolas Cagey than this.
So much more. I think here's how we do this. I think that, Alex, why don't you go first? Why don't you describe it? And
okay.
if we're going to know from the first shot if we pick.
I will do the very opening. It's like the prologue scene. I'll describe it and we'll see what happens.
Yep.
It's a simple, it's a carnival. It's a fair. There's a merry-go-round.
Oh, come on.
Okay. John Travolta. John Travolta's on the merry-go-round with a little boy.
Ah!
All right. It's how all good movies start.
Face waterfall.
Face waterfall. We cut up the hill. It's almost like JFK-esque, right? The grassy knoll. You pan up and there's someone up there with a gun.
Oh.
We tilt up. Who is it?
Oh.
It's Nicolas Cage.
Oh, man. That mustache was old.
With a giant mustache.
Oh, so good.
So good.
God. I want to set a fountain drink.
And it was oh my so god. Good.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
He takes the shot, accidentally kills John Travolta's son, and then John Travolta spends the rest of the movie being really mad about it. Face Off.
What's this about?
Dr. Walsh! I was just enjoying some of your greatest hits here. Oh, I hope you don't mind. I partook in your groovy painkillers. You know, this is fabulous work. This is oh. Bravo. Bra-fucking-bo. Oh, God, this is excellent. Bravo. Bravo.
What do you want?
Take one goddamn guess.
Like, mad enough to take this man's face off.
And put it on his face.
And put it on his own face and then get his face taken off and put on. Oh my god, this movie is such a masterclass in mixing like complex character with complete absurdity. Like, this could have been in a very different direction, a very like deep movie. Right? Like,
oh my god.
The setup for Face Off. So John Travolta plays an FBI agent. And Nicolas Cage is basically like this deranged assassin, almost like criminal master. They never really define like what it is. He like steals things and causes trouble, and he's completely insane and has a team of henchmen who follow him anywhere. And they capture him, right? Nicolas Cage, they capture him and he's in a coma. And they decide they need to find out. They discover that his brother and him have planned to blow something up, and they need to find the bomb. So in pure 90s fashion, they have a scientist who says, hey, we figured out how to give you someone's face. You know, like basically what Mission Impossible had been doing for years already. They're like, we can do this. So they literally just laser cut Nicolas Cage's face off.
This is over. I want you to take this face and burn it.
Like, the science behind it is so long. Like, they're two very different body types, right? Like, John Travolta is a heftier, larger man. Yeah, Nicolas Cage looks like he's been doing cocaine since the 80s. And they somehow, by slicing his face off with a laser, they put it on, and suddenly John Travolta is Nicolas Cage.
Well, they told him, too, that they were going to liposuct some of his areas to...
Right, they try to explain it. And there's something about, like, a microphone chip being implanted in his... You know, they have him, like, say a few words, and suddenly
larynx.
His voice turns into... It's... So did you choose this, AJ?
Look, the Walsh Institute was very cutting edge. Okay, Dr. Malcolm Walsh was pretty much the only guy in the history of ever that could have pulled something like this off.
But all that's the easy part. Here's the real science. This is a state-of-the-art morphogenetic template. The inside is modeled on your skull. The outside exactly like Troy's. Then we fit his face on top. Not a replica, but the real thing. Then we simply connect the muscles, tear ducts, and nerves.
This is very true.
And yet not the actors were not the only people who could. Yes, AJ picked it. The actors were not the only people who could pull this off because, again, this. So how did this get made, which is another amazing, you know, incredible, incredible podcast to whom we owe so much of a debt in their look at films and stuff. But they have a great episode on this. And in that episode, I found out the original people. And do you know who was originally intended for this movie?
Who?
Stallone and Schwarzenegger.
Oh my goodness! But there's Stallone no Schwarzenegger. Way.
See, then it would have been something different.
It was originally Stallone and Schwarzenegger, and then it went to, and then it was going to be Michael Douglas and Harrison Ford, and then that was during development, and then it went to
what?
Yep, Nicolas Cage.
Can you imagine this movie with Michael Douglas?
It's and here's,
forget Harrison Ford altogether. Just Michael Douglas,
Michael
Face Off,
Douglas Face Off would have been the Face Off that we never wanted, but deserved.
Oh my god!
And yet, I gotta say, Alex, AJ chose this. I did not.
You did not.
I did not. Which
well, good. I'm glad because
first ever trifecta.
One more movie to talk about.
Yeah. But
because there's also a lot of other Nicolas Cage movies that are very similar to Face Off, like an absurd action movie,
absurd,
over the top. You know, based on a weird premise that like these movies do very, very well for themselves when they come out.
Yeah.
Face Off was made on a budget of $80 million and it did $245 million at the box office. Like at the time in the 90s. This was like prime action Hollywood. Oh and you God. Watch it now and the whole movie is stunt doubles who do not match the actor they're trying to
double. Oh my God.
At all. It's John Woo, who is the director, his signature doves.
Yep.
In almost every fight there is, there's suddenly just birds flying. Indoor fights, outdoor fights, it doesn't matter. There's an explosion and then there's slow motion doves flying across, and then someone's jumping out from behind a corner with two pistols, and
it's
absolutely absurd. But at the time, people were all about it. Got great reviews. It did very well financially. Like,
Who do you think played the better version of the other?
Well, this is what I found interesting is like, because I figure like, okay, like that makes sense. Nicolas Cage starts really over the top as a crazy person, so that John Travolta can match that. And it can be contrasted against his kind of by the book, you know, stoic FBI character. You really find out that it's just that's who Nicolas Cage is. Like, even when Nicolas Cage becomes John Travolta, he's still pretty Nicolas Cage. And Travolta does his best to like take that on and become this crazy person.
Yes.
But it doesn't really work. Like, they don't, I, in my own personal opinion, I don't think that they quite pull off the switch as actors.
AJ, do you agree or disagree?
I agree. It's almost like, how do you act as Cage?
How does Cage act as Cage?
There were definitely some things about this movie for me. I chose this because my buddies and I, this has been a very quotable movie for us for whatever reason. I don't know.
I will edit in some reasons right now.
We'll take a break when the case breaks, okay?
I never really enjoy the Messiah. In fact, I think it's fucking boring. But your voice makes even a hack like him seem like a genius.
Dress up like Halloween and ghouls will try to get in your pants.
Bye, bro. Drop me a line sometime.
I mean, it's crazy, right? Like, the names cracked me up. Castor Troy, you know, Pollux Troy. I'm thinking like, okay, did we just, you know, roll word dice together to come up with this stuff? But
Greek gods.
I like the fact that it's a Cage movie, so you're watching it going, okay, this is going to be kind of funny. And, you know, you're right. They definitely take some turns. But, you know, in Woo style, it's very how the heck did this happen? You know, the, you know, prison with magnetic boots. You know, I'm thinking,
right,
hey, you know, that's OK. I mean, that could happen somewhere, you know, that's in the middle of the ocean on a looks like an oil rig. But, you know, the other characters were kind of cracking me up too. You know, like you think, okay, Margaret Cho's in this movie.
Yes.
She's a comedian. Yes, she's great. You know, and I actually really like her work. And I'm, you know, looking like, well, what else has she been in? Well, she's been in some TV stuff. You know, she's a comedian, obviously, 30 Rock. You know, and James Denton, right? I'm thinking, yes. God, this guy looks familiar to me. What the hell has he been in? It's like, oh my God, that's a Desperate Housewives guy.
Yeah.
I forget the character's name, but, you know, and then Robert Wisdom, who plays Tito. I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. I remember him. He was in Ballers. He was in Dark Knight Rises, you know, as an officer. I'm like, there's so many people in this that I looked at and was like, what the hell have they been in?
And the icing on the cake for me with the casting, because it's brilliant casting. And you know they got it right because the daughter's boyfriend.
Oh, my God.
Tries to force himself on her in the car is Danny Masterson.
Jesus.
From that 70s show.
Christ.
Who is now, what, is he in prison or on his way?
Yeah, he's
for assaulting women. Like they just knew.
Hey, somebody. How about this, Danny Masterson? How about don't sexually assault people?
Don't assault
How about
people?
Just don't do that?
We've seen you since 1996. Like,
like, please don't do that. Like,
typecasting, stop, I guess.
Stop doing that. Here's something fun. Here's another fun thing I want to throw at you. Speaking of, this is why I asked this question initially of the casting, of what you guys thought, who played the better version. Because, again, this is another how did this get made fact. The last scene of this movie, I believe, is the first scene that they filmed. So you would think that if you're doing this movie, you'd want to give the actors a baseline of who each other's playing so they can imitate it. No. We start at the end.
If you're taking this concept as an actor, the first thing you want to do probably is get into a room with the other actor
and learn
and
how
to figure out. Like, I'm sure that Jamie Lee Curtis and Lindsay Lohan for Freaky Friday
had lunch at least
before they started filming to say, hey, here's how I'm going to do this before we switch bodies so that you can
do it.
As a director, I'm sure I want it. I guarantee you they did not have so much as a phone call before they started filming.
No.
Tips, right? Like, okay, Travolta, here's how you do the crazy cage eyes. Cadences go.
They're like picking it up as they go, you know, and with John Travolta probably paying more attention, right, as he's watching Nicolas Cage work.
Yes.
And picking up little tidbits. So the performance does shift dramatically scene to scene, like how they're doing it. But Cage doesn't really change character the whole time. He's just him. He just walks into the room and he's like, I'm here now.
Exactly. I mean, literally, he just says, I'm here, and whatever you're going to get is what you're going to get.
You're going to get it.
Oh my God. Just so incredible.
I think there was a non-verbal visual cue that I think they tried to do where Travolta, when his like, I love you thing is touching their face.
Yep. The face waterfalls.
Kind of kind of weird, but you know, I thought that was, you know, a nice attempt to try to, you know, differentiate the who is who.
Mm-hmm.
They tried.
It was an effort,
but it still works. It's still fun to watch.
Oh yeah,
because like you start to lose track of it in your head as you're watching the two of them, you know, face off.
Yeah, yeah.
But it doesn't really matter.
No,
it stays entertaining the whole time. It's very like the structure just works. They're like every scene kind of matters in terms of moving the story forward. Like. I wouldn't say the movie takes itself seriously, but like they do take themselves seriously. Like they never lose sight of what they're doing.
No.
From an action movie standpoint, there's very little fluff, unnecessary fluff.
Well, there's some pretty epic moments too. You know, if you think about it, right? Like, you know, in the beginning when they're chasing Castor Troy and he's on the jet, and my thought is, okay, so did Travolta say, hey, give me a reason to fly a helicopter, like figure out how to make this work. You know, because I'm an aviation guy, right? And I mean, he just kind of pushes, gets the old pilot out, jumps in and starts flying the helicopter. I'm like, okay, that was gratuitous.
Yeah.
you're an aviator. Got it.
And not only that, but like your first action set piece is most movies' final action set piece.
Right.
Like you have this massive chase in an airport. First of all, the thing that we're not talking about, let's back it up even more between the, you know, Nicolas Cage killing a child and the jet chase.
Heavy.
We also have one of the most pervy moments in cinema, talking about Danny Masterson, which is Nicolas Cage in the listening to this choir sing and groping this teenage girl.
That's when you know you're in for a wild Nicolas Cage ride. Right? Is he's walking through this airport for some reason? There's a church choir
in the airport
singing in this giant airport,
LA Convention Center.
With Nicolas Cage dressed as this, like, he's got like greased down hair and he's in a priest's frock and starts headbanging. Starts dancing and headbanging to this church choir and then walks up and just starts like molesting.
Verbally first. Molesting her.
Well, like, what think is about it, going right? on?
What, you know, there's the International Church Choir Conference that was happening at the LA Convention Center. Some would argue that's very in line with some of those folks, I would think.
That statement aside, you know, it is true. You automatically get a sense for what this movie is and where he's gonna go.
It's dark. And then there's the really weird scene later after Nicolas Cage's character has taken John Travolta's face and goes to his home. And you realize that he's like got this weird thing for his teenage daughter. And there's this creepy scene where he comes into the daughter's room and he's like checking her out. But it's as John Travolta, she thinks that it's her dad.
I don't think you heard me, Jamie. You've got something that I crave. Papa's got a brand new bag.
Oh!
I will say that is one thing that is effective about the movie is because you do such a good job establishing that Nicolas Cage is like batshit insane at the beginning of this film when he is wearing John Travolta's face. So much of the tension of Travolta as Cage is, are they going to catch him? So much of the tension of Cage as Travolta is, oh my God, there he is in a room with innocent people and he could do something at any minute. Do you know what I mean? What is he going to do with his daughter and his wife and all his, you know what I mean? Like, that's mm-hmm. the tension of those scenes. And it really does play.
And he went totally Ozzy and Harriet with him.
Oh my God.
Became a little more edgy, you know, it's like, oh, hey, they have a family. I'm just going to kind of come right in here and hey, what's
so
up?
So crazy.
You know, Alex, you mentioned this is a very, very 90s moment. The 90s moment for me was when they find the plans for the biological weapon.
Oh,
put
yeah.
that zip disc in.
Uh-huh. Thinking,
oh, Jesus. I haven't seen one of those in a long time.
I remember the zip discs. Good those night. Things were like thick. They were heavy. They were like the evolution from the floppy disk.
Oh, they could hold a whole, like, you know, 5 megabytes.
Oh, yeah.
That's how I feel. Oh, how I feel whenever I watch Jurassic Park and she talks about, oh my God, it's a CD-ROM. And you're like, oh God, get out of here.
Oh, I love it.
This is actually a good segue into my choice because my choice is about family and also about the 90s. We open with some war footage. Maybe it's a general talking. He's just talking about what a good job his soldiers did and how he's just so excited to get them home. You know, and that's going to be a theme of this movie, is getting home. It's all about getting home. And we open on, I think it's Alabama or something, even though there's a river. Like, there's like a big river, big ocean, you know, in Alabama or whatever, that, you know, whatever southern state this is. Tugboat pulls up to a dock. On this dock is like a bar where a waitress is working and, you know, is being, you know, being hounded by some from afar by some bad hombres. And also a fact I said bad hombres. Let's just take a second and realize how Trump has wormed his way into my brain. Never ever gonna say that phrase again. Bad guys. And Nicolas Cage gets off this boat, hugs this woman who we find out is his wife. And then these bad men are like, you know, harassing them. And then he's like, you know, just leave us alone, man. And Nicolas Cage's, from the beginning, his accent, I don't know what state it takes place in because I don't know what his accent is. He didn't know what his accent is. It is disturbing. But we cut to later in the evening. He and his wife are getting in a car to go home. The guys approach them. try to entice Nicolas Cage to do a fight. His wife is calling for him to get back in the car.
Not going
to
have it.
Not going to have it. Nicolas Cage breaks these guys' arms and then kills one of these men with incredible strength. A punch to the face, which shoves the nose bone up into the brain, I guess, and he dies.
I love this movie so much.
Yeah, my favorite part is when the judge says,
Cameron Pope, you have pleaded guilty to manslaughter in the first degree. With your military skills, you are a deadly weapon and are not subject to the same laws as other people that are provoked because you can respond with deadly force.
It's like, that's not how it works. That's
peak
not
action
how...
star Cage.
Of course, we're talking about Con Air.
What's this shit? It's my daughter.
Well, I don't care if it's a weeping mama cries. There's no personal possessions on this airplane.
Just as long as you know I'll be getting that back at some point.
Are you telling me what I'm going to be doing here, numbnuts?
You heard me.
Con Air.
He gives a great opportunity to show that body, that killing machine
Dude,
body off with
the cage. I'm going to tell you something right now. I fully was not prepared for how in shape Nicolas Cage got for this film. I was like, God damn, Nicolas Cage. You went in, like, and unnecessarily so. Like, nobody else. John Malkovich isn't, like, in shape like that for this movie. You know what I mean? Like, Danny Trejo wasn't looking like that for this movie. You know?
It kind of came and went, though, because, like, he's right in the middle of his action star phase. Yeah. But this is really the only movie where he looks like he could kill you with his bare hands.
With his bare... And he literally looks like convict Jesus wandering around the desert. And
hey, listen, guys, he's a deadly, deadly man. He's had very specific military training.
Very specific. Golly. You know, you got Bubba from Forrest Gump looking for his diabetes medication. Me and Sarah watched this movie and it was like chaos. Like, it was like an opera of chaos. You know, the basic plot is that, you know, Nicolas Cage gets put in, gets put in jail for like 7 years and he's finally going to go home to see his wife and their new daughter. And when he gets on this plane to get back, this airplane with a bunch of convicts, of course, this is the plane that John Malkovich as Cyrus the Virus is on and has planned this incredible, you know, plot to take over the plane. And John Cusack is the DEA agent on the ground trying to, you know, work with Nicolas Cage to get this plane back under control. It's like Air Force One, but like on crack. It's marvelous. And some of the things that happen, but it was truly enjoyable. Like, that was the thing that I was shocked at. I was like, this is...
Oh, yeah. I mean, I used to love this movie when I was younger because it would be on TV all the time. I probably had it on VHS or something like that. And like, it was exciting to watch. Like, I remember a lot of moments just in retrospect from being a kid. Cause like Dave Chappelle's there.
Oh my God.
Hey man.
For some reason, hey man. Like, it's so good.
Well, now look at this walking penis. Boy, you are one skinny Negro.
Easy, man.
Open
shit.
Up. Oh man, it smells like so much shit in your mouth.
Told me he loved me.
And yeah, Cyrus the Virus. I mean, honestly, Air Force One had a similar effect on me. Just this, it's such a big idea.
Yeah.
You know, the 90s was so good for these really big ideas that they pull out, because it doesn't matter how goofy it gets, like you're in.
Guys, go ahead.
Buscemi was in this movie.
Buscemi. Yes. Let's talk about Buscemi.
As like the creepy
Garland Green, man.
Garland Green.
It was like the same character from Billy Madison that he played. Like,
oh my God. And yet he's singing, and as the planes, he's singing, he got the whole world.
Oh, God.
And you're just like he plays essentially like Hannibal Lecter, and he's like having tea time with this child in the middle of the desert at some point.
Well, what's great is like they cast Cage in this movie. He's the star. He's sort of the straight man against
everybody
he's surrounded by. He's the guy that you're supposed to be rooting for, who's the sane, you know, loves his family, like wants to get back kind of thing. Which is feels very not Nicolas Cage.
And that's what the problem is, because to play that, he goes over the top and
right.
like becomes crazy. Like he becomes a parody. Like, this is the movie in which he became a parody of himself, because it's just like you watch him and you're like, sir, there, if you like let the wind blow through your hair one more time. You know what I mean? Like he plays him like I imagine he would have played Superman. Like, it's very just like, dude, you gotta stop this. This is insane now.
Well, so like, this is really funny for me. Yeah, I love Buscemi. Buscemi is, that's my guy, right? Even though I've never met him. I feel like Buscemi's character went directly from Con Air to Armageddon.
Absolutely. Right? Like,
mm-hmm. Like, oh, 100%. Guy, like, oh, did they just pick this guy up from having tea in the desert with a little girl? Like,
that's what occurred to me too, was watching this, the overlap in actors between these movies, between all the Jerry Bruckheimer films.
Oh.
Is staggering. Like, you get Steve Buscemi, Ving Rhames, like everybody just shows up in Armageddon.
I had to think to myself, was Nicolas Cage in Armageddon? Like, he had to have been considered for that role.
Absolutely
at some
had
point.
To have been considered,
because he would have been perfect. He would have fit that like a glove.
Oh my god. It would have been, you know what? But you know what? It's a little. It was hard because he was a little right. Bruce Willis was in that perfect place where you'd believe him as that father. Because you need a little more grizzled.
Like young Nicolas Cage would have been good for Ben Affleck's character
in a heartbeat. Yeah.
Yes.
It was just like this. Yeah, what a crazy time, y'all. And the other on like, that's why I chose this movie. By the way, Alex, you mentioned was, to me, Face Off is obviously an amazing showcase for Nicolas Cage, but it's he's sharing the billing, and I wanted the movie where it was like, Nicolas Cage is at the heart. He's the heartbeat of this movie. And yet, even in this movie, I got to give it, you know, John Cusack is always great. John Malkovich, y'all, came to work.
Oh my God. Say there was a disturbance, but everything's under control. Say it, or I will kill you.
Without me, you got nobody to fly the plane.
I never think that far ahead.
And if you say a word about this over the radio, the next wings you see will belong to the flies buzzing over your rotting corpse.
He showed up to work on set that day, and it is just fantastic.
Malkovich has range.
Malkovich has...
Look, he just shows up, and you're like, John Malkovich, I was not expecting you here. That new Space Force show?
Oh, my God. He's
that he's
terrible.
On is like an office comedy basically, and he's amazing.
I mean, and this is the same man who gave us Lenny from Of Mice and Men. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm saying.
Right?
Like, it's he really when you know it. We've kind of lost the age of the character actor. You know, in terms of the leading man character, the leading men who really transform themselves. Like right now, that's just not the in thing. The in thing is kind of just play variations on yourself, which is fine, and that takes just as much effort. But like, when you get that person who is truly a chameleon, and John Malkovich,
and now we're starting to connect these dots now, and I'm like, John Malkovich to being John Malkovich,
yep,
to Charlie Kaufman to adaptation, but then also John Cusack was in being John Malkovich.
Yep,
these guys really they need to find some new friends.
Well, Malkovich is pretty awesome anyway. I mean, how could you go, how could you be Cyrus the Virus and on the same hand be Teddy KGB?
Teddy KGB!
Come on.
Love that film. That's Rounders, right? I'm not being crazy.
Yeah, I love
Rounders. Oh my God. That movie has a special place in my heart. But yeah, guys, so Con Air was, I was just like, that is pure uncut Cage to me. And he did not disappoint. He just... My God, if I saw him run away from one more explosion, haphazard, with the best sprint in the world. It was just like the movie felt like watching Nicolas Cage watch himself and being like, good. Like, that's, you felt dirty. You felt like Nicolas Cage was just so proud of his work. And you're like, oh, you mess. But I love you.
It's like that was a pretty good performance.
And there's so many runners up. I mean, what's the total count? 110. Films.
Oh, my God.
He's been in.
What a filmography. What a work.
What a filmography. So the original movie I watched for this, I had never heard of it, and I was looking through lists, and this one kept popping up, and I was like, I've never heard of this movie. It's called Red Rock West.
I've never heard of it.
It's from 1993. Huh. It had a 93% on Rotten Tomatoes. I was like, what is this? Lara Flynn Boyle's in it.
Oh my God.
It's a Western noir about a guy looking for work. Nicolas Cage plays, and Dennis Hopper's in it, which
obviously
you can't go wrong with Dennis Hopper. He plays a guy, a former Marine looking for work, and he shows up and he gets mistaken for a hitman. And he kind of like takes the job, not really knowing what it is, and gets all caught up in this thing. And then Dennis Hopper's the real hitman who comes to town, like ready to do the job. And it's like a very like subtle, well acted noir. And I watched it and I was like, this movie's too good. It's like not, it's like right before he became Nicolas Cage. He was still in that. The cold open though is like him. He parks his car in the middle of the desert and it's that early 90s, like saxophone kind of music. And he just starts working out. He just gets down on the road, this like highway, and just starts doing like one armed push-ups, just like changing his shirt.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. But Red Rock West, surprising. I think it went straight to video when it was made too.
I mean, where else would it go?
Yeah. Exactly. Well,
there's a lot of movies though, if you think about it. There's a lot of movies you can pick.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many. My top three choices, obviously I chose Face Off, but I would have picked Con Air. I would have picked, you know, National Treasure. I mean, yep. That's a great movie. The guy stole the freaking Declaration of Independence.
And that's that's
and like the cultural icon that movie is. Like,
oh my god,
that movie's still on the tips of people's tongue.
And that's to say nothing of The Wicker Man. And
true.
You know, and then there's Wicker Man.
And then there's Wicker Man. And there's...
But sometimes he would find, you know, Wicker Man was ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
But he would find these movies. And I would say Con Air maybe even is one of them that fit that perfect balance between Nick Cage craziness and actual, like the movies like Matchstick Men, Gone in 60 Seconds, yep. Like where it only makes like Nick Cage makes so much sense and he makes the movie, but it's not like a Nick Cage movie.
No,
like, it's still, it's got some weight behind it.
Yeah. Again, he can act. It's just like, he's also, I mean, I don't know this man, but Nick Cage, you seem crazy. And I love that. Oh, I love you for being crazy.
None of us picked The Rock.
No, not one. But you know what? Again, I just, for me, that movie is all Sean Connery. Like, not that he's not amazing, but like, I don't, you know, I think he really was in, he wasn't in the driver's seat there like he was with Con Air and Face Off. Oh my God.
And they're very similar movies.
Yes.
Big criminal act.
Yeah.
They always have to do with really weighty criminals, right?
Yeah.
Just really bad guys and Nicolas Cage.
I mean, what else? You know what? You know what just occurred? What just occurred to me is the similarities between The Rock and Pirates of the Caribbean. Just structurally.
There's something
to it. There's some.
Well, isn't? I guess that I was gonna say isn't The Rock like a breakout movie, but it's a break in movie.
Yeah, break in movie. But like anytime, I mean, just in terms of playing like the young, and the antihero, just a lot of
yeah, cool I can see that.
You know, some things.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And then you know he does romance pretty well too. Against All Odds, City of Angels. I remember maybe because the music was so one song, was so prevalent when it came out. I remember
the Goo Goo Dolls.
Yeah, Iris. God, that movie or that song's amazing. And so the movie I don't even know if I've ever seen it, but I know that the feeling it gave me back in the day. And the same thing with like The Family Man, and he does that pretty well. The Weatherman.
I love.
He's played a lot of man.
You know, Nick, I was thinking too that this would have been a sneaky way for you to fit into the Spider-Verse in.
Oh, I know.
So I was thinking, I'm like, okay, wait, is he gonna go there?
No, I would, but it's not.
It's not KG. I know.
It's just not him.
It's not him.
He was brilliant in that movie. I mean, that was a perfect casting.
Well, that movie itself was amazing.
Yeah, that movie. Yeah, we're gonna have to talk about that movie at some point because it's just so good.
That's the best Spider-Man movie made, in my opinion.
Oh yeah, I don't disagree.
One of the best superhero movies.
Yeah, easily.
Yeah.
The guy was Ghost Rider too.
Oh yeah,
that's right.
Good night, man.
Dude.
Jeez.
If you expand if they bring the Ghost Rider back into the MCU, that's your guy. Let's get him in.
Jeez.
Oh, good lord.
How awesome would that be?
AJ, it's been such a pleasure having you on this
week. Thank you for coming.
Yeah, thanks guys. That was really awesome.
You know, you were the best. Do you want people to follow you on the social medias?
They can if they want. I'm not the most interesting follow unless you want to see like, you know, pictures of my kids doing kid stuff.
That's awesome. Awesome. Well, what's your handle?
Okay. It's at Milla, MILLA 044 on Twitter and the gram.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, Alex, as always, you know, I'm going to keep working on that swearing, buddy.
Yeah, you did pretty well.
Dude, you did awesome this time.
You did pretty well this time.
You had like a Nicolas Cage body count in your swear words.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. I really pulled it back for y'all. You know, who knows what's going to happen next episode, but this time I did it. I did it.
Good for you.
Thank you. All right, y'all. Been a pleasure. Have a wonderful day. Stay safe. We will see you soon.
Bye.
Little Justice. Little Justice. Little Justice. Fuck yeah.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.